Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today's guest is going to go nameless because it is the story that counts and there is some privacy involved. And sometimes we, yes, the story is what's important and not necessarily the name of the person who's telling it. So I'm going to go to you and you can tell this love story.
September of 2008, I was visiting a friend in San Miguel Allende. Mm-hmm. It's about 3 hours north of Mexico City, a little difficult to get to, but a beautiful colonial city with cobblestone streets. Mm-hmm. I had already purchased, before I went to Mexico, a ticket to Holland to visit our daughter, who was an international lawyer, mm-hmm. at the criminal courts. She was working on a very interesting legal case. I wanted to see what she was doing and spend mm-hmm. time with her. I had originally planned a 2-week trip, and in the rush of trying to get ready to come back to the United States, I fell on the cobblestone streets and tore my hamstring. I went to bed for a few days, but it was clear my leg was injured. I consulted with the doctor, and the doctor said, well, it tore, and I could hear it tear, and strangers rushed to my help, to my aid. And I was worried. I'd never done this kind of thing. I'm very mm-hmm. mindful
fleet of foot.
Cobblestone streets. Yeah. I've been to San Miguel many times. And I actually felt stupid. Like, how did I let this happen? But I tripped on on a stone. My leg began to swell. I went to bed in my friend's beautiful home, and I rested for a few days. And I started realizing that maybe it wouldn't be a good idea to fly home. And furthermore, perhaps even continue on to Europe the following mm-hmm. week. So I did call my doctor from Mexico, and she said, well, I think if you keep your leg iced when you come back, I want you to get an x-ray, but I think you probably are okay to go. My leg did turn black. When I've heard this phrase, black and blue, I actually had a black leg.
Yeah.
It was very strange to see this part, and I have photographs of this.
Painful?
Yes, very painful. And when I got the MRI with a radiologist,
you had a lot of sophisticated contacts there. It's not like you were some stranger in Mexico.
I flew back to the United States
and went
to UCSF.
Oh, I see.
And I was shown the detached part of my, where the buttock meets the upper
uh-huh.
thigh. So I thought, well, I wonder what will happen if I change my ticket. So I called the airline, and they were kind enough to say, well, we can give you a seat. I had a good seat, but mm-hmm. I think I wanted a bulkhead because I could put my leg up, and I said I was mm-hmm. going to have to keep it elevated during the flight. That was the recommendation of the doctor. Fast forward, when I'm on the phone with the airline, they said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. Since you have a letter from your doctor, we'll let you you can return a week later. I had mentioned the doctor thought I should stay in bed the first week. So I arrive in Holland. I go to my daughter's apartment, and I basically rest for mm-hmm. the first week. Second week, we had planned a trip to Bruges. The third week, when we finally finished traveling together, she was back at work, and it was raining. It rains mm-hmm. frequently in Holland. I had a rental car, and 2 nights before I was about to leave, I said, I think we should do something special tonight. She said, well, let's think about it. And I said, well, why don't I come pick you up? I was on the phone with her because she usually rode her bicycle. She said, pick me up at 5, and I'll go to my yoga class at 6. She always went to yoga at 7 or 7:30.
Oh.
That particular day, because
she was going to go at 6 so that you could have the evening together?
Well, yes, and the fact that I picked her up, and mm-hmm. it was just somewhat serendipitous. Mm-hmm. I said, sure, I'll leave your bike at the office.
Mm-hmm.
It was drizzling. I'll come pick you up. She said, I'll run in the house, change my clothes, and go to the 6 o'clock yoga class. The options were 6 or 7:30. So for the first time in my visit with her, she went to this yoga class at 6. So as we're driving to the yoga class, we are near the International Peace Palace in The Hague. And she says, look, Mom, There's a very famous place there called Wicked Wine, which is a gathering place for a lot of the diplomats and people who are in the field of international criminal law. And it had been closed for the 2 weeks. First week I was in bed. The second week we were in Bruges. The third week it looked like it was opening that night. So she said, why don't you, well, I go to the 6 o'clock class. Why don't you go in and see if you can get us a table? So I park the car and I go to the door. The door's closed. They're not opening until 7:30. And I knock on the door. I see a sign. It says opening 7:30 after 3 weeks of construction, whatever. And the manager came to the door and I explained that I was visiting from California, that I really couldn't walk very far and it was drizzling. Would he mind letting me in the restaurant to sit wait until 7:30?
And you had like an hour and a half?
I had an hour and a half to wait. I had my book. And I thought, well, I'll ask this man. And he thought about it. He said, well, we don't usually do this, but sure, come on in. But you have to promise me you must leave at 7:30 because we're packed tonight. It's opening night. And the whole restaurant is already spoken for. Because I said, well, can I stay and have dinner? No. He said, I'm so sorry. So I'm sitting reading the Guernsey Potato Peel Society book, and I'm in World War II, and I did order a glass of wine, and I sat there and was mindful of my watch and time, and I started seeing people gathering outside the window, and I was sitting in probably the most prominent part of the restaurant near the window at the best table. And as I'm sitting there reading my book, I look around, and suddenly it's 7:29. And as promised, oh, and the other thing that happens when I travel, I wear earplugs frequently because I like to have silence, and they were busy preparing the restaurant for the opening. So at 7:29, I packed up my book and got up from the table, collected my things, and the door opens, and the throng of people come in. The first two people were two young men who came up to me and said something. The brother of the other young man said, you know, you look too young to be wearing hearing aids. I said, no, these are earplugs. And there was this sort of jovial exchange. And this man says to me, do you mind if we sit at your table? I said, well, you know, it's not my table. Yeah. I'm actually in the process of leaving. At that moment, the manager came to me and said, the people who had reserved this table canceled.
Oh, my goodness.
Would you like this table?
With your two new friends.
With my two new friends. And I said, well, sure, but I don't know how my daughter is going to feel. I must go consult with her. At which point, one of the two young men says to me, well, do you mind if we join you? Because obviously this is a great table.
And yes.
I said, well, I'll have to see. I can't speak for my daughter, but I'm going to walk over to her yoga class, pick her up. She has no idea that I have a table at this restaurant.
Or that you have two new best friends.
And all along the walk, I'm thinking, gosh, that other quiet young man was really quite amazingly interesting. He said a few words, but he was very compelling. As I'm walking to yoga, I'm thinking, how do I say to my daughter that I just met these lovely young men, and I really would like to be spend some time with them?
Of course.
So as she comes out, I very quietly said, you know, the most amazing thing is, I sat in Wicked Wine for an hour and a half, and as I had promised, I got up to leave at 7:30, and lo and behold, the manager came to me and told me that the people who had that table had canceled. Would I like the table? And furthermore, two lovely young men came into the restaurant and asked if they could join the table. I told them that I could not speak for you, that you may not feel like you want to engage with anybody else. It was a table for four, so one could have just addressed the person. But essentially, these were strangers.
Did you have in mind what you thought she might say, knowing her?
She might have said, No, I'm not up for that. I'm not in the mood to talk to strangers. But I think she had been zenned out by her yoga class and was willing to try. And I believe I said they were, you know, very interesting young men. I was very excited about this young man who did not speak for some reason. I can't explain why. I just felt something about him. So my daughter said, sure, whatever. So we walk back into the restaurant. I precede her. The two young men are opposite one another. The brother of the young man, which I'll talk about in a minute, is very outgoing and says to me, oh, sit next to me. My daughter trailed behind. The other young man looks up, sees my daughter, and I saw something happen between them. We proceed to have 5 hours together.
Wow.
The young man was treating his brother to a birthday dinner, and Holland is expensive, and wine was ordered, and food was ordered, and next I know, at 2 in the morning, there is a 500-euro bill for the evening. And I thought, okay, I'll split this. So I take out my credit card, and the young man, it was treating his brother, said, no, 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 this was my brother's birthday gift, and we're delighted you joined us, and consider it a treat. And I thought, well, that's very gallant of him.
Yes.
And on the other hand, I still felt uncomfortable. So as we walk to the car, I get in our rental car, I look out the window, and I see that my daughter and this young man are exchanging information.
Nice.
Emails, phone number, whatever. And the brother, who was the outgoing brother who initiated this can I sit at your table evening, was sitting in the car and we were talking about various things. And we say goodbye. She gets in the car. We drive back. The next day I go to the airport. I'm thinking nothing of it. 4 months go by. My daughter calls me in January or February and told me she was back in the United States. She was going to take the New York bar and the California bar. And that although she wanted to come back to her hometown, San Francisco, she was probably going to be in Europe for at least 6 months. And I said, oh, really? I'm excited for you, but I'm disappointed. And she said, furthermore, Mom, I have a boyfriend. And I said, oh, tell me all about him. Tell me a little bit about this young man. And she paused and she said, Mom, you met him. And I said, oh, that lovely young man who treated us. They are now married. Talking about having a family, and they're both working on the same trial in The Hague.
Oh, talk about shopping for a son-in-law. You did well.
And I jokingly say to my son-in-law, unfortunately, for the rest of your life, when people ask how you met...
My mother-in-law picked me up at her restaurant.
Go.
Oh, my
goodness.
So that's
my love story.
That's wonderful. Oh, that has such a nice ending.
And now
I'm sitting here on pins and needles because I didn't know if it was going to have a sad ending.
No, and he's extraordinary. And had it not been for the...
So how long have they been married now?
Let me see. They met in 2008. And so, we are now... six years, and they were together for 3 years and got married 3 years ago.
Oh, that is just wonderful.
In Gibraltar.
Oh, okay. So what do we learn from this? Let's talk about this. Mothers, join right in.
What do we learn? One thinks, okay, it was a random accident. Well, let's back up. Having not been persistent... And going to the door and taking the sign at face value, I would have walked away.
Oh, yes, of course, like the closed sign.
But I did knock on the door, and I very politely explained my situation, that I had a healing hamstring, and I needed a place to wait for my daughter for an hour and a half. The man was kind enough to listen and to be open to something he had not done before.
So you were comfortable enough in asking a favor out of need.
I was comfortable enough asking for a favor. I'm also an American, and Americans are very, in my experience, forthcoming and honest, and I explained that I needed a place to wait, and I didn't want to sit in the street. And so the extraordinary component of that manager was not knowing me, knowing I was visiting from another place, came to me the very moment these young men asked if they could join my table. Mm-hmm. I explained it wasn't my table, and then he came and told me I could have the table in front of them.
Yes.
So is that random accident? Is that divine intervention? I think it was random accident, but he offered me the table, and the whole world changed.
I have to ask you something, just mother to mother. When you saw these two lovely young men and you were really drawn to this one and you were going to ask if your daughter would like to sit with them, did you have any idea that you were introducing your daughter to two lovely young men? I mean, what did that play a part?
Oh, I knew on the walk in the rain to pick her up. I felt like this was an extraordinary young man. He said a couple of things. He also is in the same field. He was working for the prosecution on a criminal trial. Mm-hmm. Our daughter, at that point, was working on the defense team of the trial. And so we joked a little bit about that, just briefly. Mm-hmm. I knew he was involved.
But did you have a matchmaker feel about you, or do you not generally do that?
I would certainly never do that with my daughter, nor would my daughter let me.
No, I realize,
I have explained to my daughter and my son that the nature of romance today, if it's online or whatever, 100 years ago, pretty much everybody married somebody their family knew or approved of.
Well, that's, yes.
And the arranged marriages, forget it. But my children are fiercely independent and would laugh at the idea. If I said to my daughter, oh, I met this guy and I think I want to go out with him.
Right.
So I kind of played it cool, but I really hoped she would say yes. And she did say. She could have said no.
Yeah.
She could have said, no, I'm not in the mood. I don't want to sit.
Would you have been sad if she had said that?
I would have never known. And I don't even know where we would have gone. But I was glad that she was open and that made me proud of her.
Yes.
And deep down, 6 years later, she knows the story inside out because it is incredible that I saw them kind of falling in love
right away
across the table from me. But I didn't know where the story was going after they met because she's very private.
Yes. Okay, so.
And the reason that this is an anonymous interview is that I respect that.
Oh,
I am very open and I tell people things that never are making them uncomfortable, but I share my experiences in life. And this one is so profoundly powerful because they are married. They're now talking about starting a family. And had it not been for the rainy night, the early yoga class.
But, you know, we do. You make an interesting point, though. That, you know, 100 years ago, people met in rather circumscribed ways.
Correct.
And they don't anymore. And where is the living room in which people meet? We're busy. We go to work. We come home. We walk the dog. We take yoga. We have dinner with some friends. We read and you go to bed. And then the next morning you get up for, where is the opportunity really to meet people that come, meet people who come to you highly recommended?
Well, often people are set up, friends say, if they meet at weddings, but this was so extraordinarily random.
Right.
Or was it random?
Well,
I mean, is this... my husband, who's a statistician, among many things, says, you know, it's random accident.
That's not the person you want to ask for a romantic answer. The statistician?
No.
I mean, I can see where he would say that.
It was
wonderful. Let me ask you something else. So at the wedding, for example, was this referred to? I mean,
my daughter and son-in-law had no one at their wedding. They chose to get married in Gibraltar. They had been living together for three years, but my husband and I had a similar, but we didn't want, we had been living together for many years. And when we got married, I told my parents that I didn't really want a big wedding. We just had a few friends.
At what point did they acknowledge, if they ever did, your hand in this, in introducing them? Have they ever
talked about it all the time?
Oh, I see. Okay. So I have a question about love letters, because, you know, that's what I'm primarily focused on in life. And I just have a question, being kind of a cheerful busybody that I am. Who would you write a love letter to right now? Here's a piece of paper. Who are you going to write a love letter to? around this whole incident, or tangential to it?
I would love to write a love letter to my now son-in-law, mm-hmm. thanking him for becoming a part of our life, for making our daughter happy.
Oh, I hope you do that.
For saying in front of me, our children someday. And I remember the moment he walked in the door. Oh, and they have adopted a little puppy, mm-hmm. a rescue puppy, and they're so devoted to this little dog. And this little guy came to live with us for a year. Now he's back in Europe. He has frequent flyer miles, this dog. He goes back and forth. My husband calls me an emotional nudist. Mm-hmm. I'm very open about how I feel, and I feel a little inappropriate. I would feel inappropriate sharing with him how much I love the fact that he loves my daughter. Oh. She's so happy. And I jokingly say, thank you for taking her.
But you know something? I have something to say about that. This is, I mean, I'm looking ahead, which I always seem to do. And if you were to write that letter to him, people keep letters. It'll go in some treasure box. It'll go in a drawer. Your grandchildren are going to find that someday. And their children may see it someday and know what they came from and know what random...
It will be in the family lore, I'm sure, at some point.
But in your handwriting.
But in handwriting or computerized copy.
Well, I see.
You're a firm believer. I
am, and I'll tell you why. Because, first of all, those grandchildren of yours are going to get to touch something that's felt the touch of your hand and that you may have held to your lips and put a little kiss on before you put it in the mailbox. And everybody has Lucida Bright. Nobody has your handwriting. I mean, everything about it is a treasure in another 80 years. I'm looking ahead.
Yes, I
am. You know, that is planting a tree under whose shade you know you will never sit.
Right.
To me, there's something gorgeous about that. But I have another thought that is just making me grin. The manager of that restaurant, a letter to him.
Oh, I believe on another trip, a subsequent trip, I went mm-hmm. And introduced myself again and shared with him that he was involved mm-hmm. in an extraordinary...
What did he say to that?
He kind of looked at me strangely. He said, that's cool. But I did explain that by being open and letting me sit there, that all sorts of good things happened.
Yes, I have a feeling that if that were in the letter to him, it would be something that would be just really a treasure.
Or he might think I'm totally crazy and not remember who I am.
That's right, he might. But you know, I think people don't do that. I think when people get a letter of appreciation or gratitude, you're never crazy for offering gratitude or love.
No.
You're never the worst off. I mean, somebody might laugh, but nobody's going to say, I mean, you're gorgeous and blonde and young and look what you did. Nobody's going to say you're some crazy old bat.
Well, I'm, of course, he meets 300 people a day. He may not remember, but that is a good point.
But it might be a nice reminder of him at his kindness.
Yes, I think that's a good point.
Oh, I hope you do those.
Thank you.
I hope you do those. This is a wonderful story. And it's also, you know, I'm thinking of, in terms, again, of letters, a letter to write. I had one guest who wrote a letter to her unborn grandchildren. And it was just a wonderful exercise. And she kept it until that baby was born and then mailed it for that baby to open when that baby was 15 or 16 or 20. There's so much to do.
There is so much to do. I have to tell you that my son and mm-hmm. daughter-in-law I will be the grandmother of a one-year-old in about mm-hmm. another month, immediately set up an email address for the baby.
Oh.
And so we...
Yes.
Send her emails about things that we share, copy her, so that someday she can
Yes.
see.
Now, do they print out the emails that you send, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Because, I have a thought there, too. Because technology changes every 25 minutes, and what is on email today is not going to be retrievable when that child is old enough to read. What if you make a copy? Oh, yes. What if you make a copy of each email you send?
Well,
sign it so there'll be something with your handwriting and just keep it in a file.
That's the point. Yeah,
because
just in case it gets lost in the cloud.
Well, it will. Or because I have copies of letters that are 100 and 106 and 120 years old and they look like they were written yesterday, whereas you cannot play your Betamax movies, right?
True.
Oh, I hope you do all that.
Well, thank you for
telling this story. This is wonderful.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Okay, so I'm just going to say goodbye for now and thank my beautiful anonymous guest and mention that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every one of life's moments is an occasion that has the seeds within it of a love letter to someone or, as you can see now, to several people. Unborn grandchildren, somebody who did a good deed for you without even realizing it. People love being reminded of that. So until next time, if you think you need to wait for that special occasion, please remember that writing a love letter itself is a special occasion. And I will say goodbye now from Janet Gallen and Miss Anonymous.
Miss Anonymous.
Thank you.